Imagine for a second that you've just bought your absolute dream sports car. You've saved up for months.
Well, yeah, you're super excited.
Right. You've watched every YouTube review. You finally drop the cash and they hand you the keys. The paint is gleaming. The leather smells brand new.
You're ready to hit the road.
Exactly. You turn the key, pull out of the dealership, make it exactly one block down the road, and then,
This complete disaster.
yeah, the engine just completely seizes. Smoke, silence, and like a blinking red light on the dashboard.
Ugh, that is the worst feeling.
That visceral sinking feeling in your stomach,
Yeah.
that absolute dread of watching a massive investment die instantly,
Huh.
that is exactly the kind of panic sweeping through the gaming world today.
It really is.
So, welcome to today's deep dive. It is July 3rd, 2026, and the internet is absolutely on fire over Valve's brand new $1,000 Steam Machine console.
Yeah, people are freaking out.
We've been poring over the data to figure out what is actually going on here. We're looking at, well, everything from granular user timelines on Reddit to deep dive hardware teardowns from Tom's Hardware and iFixit.
And we also have statements from electronics repair experts.
We do. And we are even pulling in some consumer psychology research from Stanford to sort of, understand the public reaction.
Because the reaction is just massive.
Huge. So the mission of our deep dive today is simple. We are going to cut through this viral panic for you. We need to figure out if this $1,000 device is genuinely a ticking time bomb, or if the gaming community is just suffering from some very intense, very real historical hardware trauma.
Which, spoiler alert, is definitely a factor
Oh,
here.
for sure. Okay, let's unpack this. To understand the sheer scale of the panic, we first need to look at the incredibly fast sequence of events that started it all. So walk me through the timeline of this very first reported crash.
Right, so the compression of the timeline is really the single most alarming factor here. We are looking at the very first documented death of a Steam machine, the Ground Zero case.
Exactly. Which happened to a Reddit user named 2Pill on the morning of July 2nd. And the timeline they posted is highly, highly specific.
Okay, what are we looking at?
They unboxed the console and had their first successful boot up into SteamOS at 10:15 a.m. Everything initialized perfectly.
Totally normal so far.
Right. Then, at 10:20 a.m., they downloaded and launched the game No Man's Sky, running it on high settings at 1080p.
A pretty solid test for a new machine.
Yeah, and the game ran smoothly without any artifacting or stuttering or anything. But then at 10:25 a.m., a standard system update notification popped up.
Which is completely normal for day one hardware. You always get that day one patch before you can really dive in.
Exactly, that is standard procedure. So the user closed the game and initiated the update. By 10:40 a.m., the update completed and the system did what it is programmed to do. It automatically triggered a reboot.
Okay, here we go.
But at 10:41 a.m., the device just simply failed to restart.
Like, nothing at all. Nothing.
Yeah.
There was zero video output to the television, no response to any controller inputs. The only sign of life was a single red breathing line,
Ooh.
slowly fading in and out on the right half of the console's front LED bar.
And that red line isn't just some random glitch, right?
No, definitely not.
Because according to Valve's own official diagnostic guide on Steam support, that specific LED pattern, the right half glowing red in a breathing pattern, translates exactly to, quote, system detects GPU failure.
Yep. The graphics processing unit is dead.
Now, for those of you listening who might be thinking, well, just open it up and swap out the graphics card, it doesn't really work like that, does it?
Not even a little bit.
Right, because from what I've read in these teardowns, the Steam machine uses a ball grid array, or BGA, for the GPU, meaning it's not like swapping a bad graphics card out of a PC like a Lego Grig.
No, it's way more integrated than that.
It's more like trying to extract a specific baked-in ingredient out of a fully baked cake. You can't just, pull the eggs out after the cake is done.
That is a great way to describe it.
But I have to push back here for a second. If the chip is baked right into the motherboard, shouldn't that make it more secure, like less prone to breaking?
Well, you'd think so, but it actually highlights the central, agonizing trade-off of modern consumer electronics. Manufacturers use BGA specifically for efficiency.
Okay.
By soldering the chip directly to the motherboard using hundreds of microscopic solder balls, you dramatically shorten the electrical signal paths compared to, say, using a bulky modular PCIe slot.
Right, the data doesn't have to travel as far.
Exactly. Short signal paths mean reduced latency and vastly improved signal stability, which you absolutely need in a compact, high-performance machine like this.
But there's a catch.
A huge one. That incredible efficiency completely eliminates user repairability. If even a single one of those microscopic solder balls fractures or loses contact, the entire data connection is severed.
Wow, one tiny fracture.
Just one. And fixing it requires a highly specialized industrial-level process called BGA reballing.
What does that actually look like in practice? Because it sounds intense.
It is an exhausting, incredibly risky procedure. A repair technician basically has to use a specialized hot air rework station to carefully heat and lift the dead chip.
Without burning everything else, I assume.
Right, without warping the extremely fragile fiberglass motherboard right beneath it. Then they have to chemically and mechanically strip away all the old solder.
Okay, that sounds like a nightmare.
It gets worse. They use a precision laser-cut stencil to apply new flux and hundreds of new microscopic solder balls to the chip. And finally, they reflow the chip back onto the board in a precisely temperature-controlled oven.
That is ridiculous. I mean, what does that even cost?
Well, according to the repair technicians at linuxcompatible.org, attempting this on a chip the size of the Steam Machine's GPU costs between $500 and $800.
On a $1,000 console.
Exactly. And the success rate hovers around a mere 60 to 70%. This is why the vast majority of local consumer repair shops won't even accept the job.
So basically, the stakes for you, the buyer, are massive. If this single irreplaceable component fails, your $1,000 console is instantly transformed into a very heavy, you know, very expensive paperweight.
Pretty much. Your only realistic option is hoping for a full warranty replacement from Valve.
And because it's a catastrophic, unrepairable GPU failure indicated by a glowing red light.
Oh, here it comes.
Yeah, that instantly triggers flashbacks to the biggest hardware disaster in gaming history.
We really have to connect this to the ghost of gaming past to truly understand the sheer panic on social media right now.
Oh, absolutely.
The symptoms of this crash are triggering a massive trauma response for a lot of people.
You're talking about the Xbox 360's Red Ring of Death?
Or ARAD.
Yep, the Red Ring.
If you were gaming anywhere between 2005 and 2009, just hearing those words probably sends a shiver down your spine.
It really does. It remains one of the most devastating, expensive product recalls in the history of consumer electronics.
That's a total disaster. The early Xbox 360 models suffered from profound thermal design flaws. The chips generated enormous heat, and the cooling system was just drastically insufficient.
And didn't they change the solder they were using right around then?
They did. The transition to a new type of lead-free solder meant the physical joints between the GPU and motherboard were brittle. So under heat, the motherboard would literally warp, snapping those solder joints.
Just ripping the connection apart.
Exactly. When the connection broke, the console gave you three red rings around the power button. And the numbers on this are still staggering.
How bad was it?
Industry reports estimated the failure rate at up to 54%.
That is insane. Over half of all consoles sold eventually died.
Yeah. Microsoft was forced to implement a sweeping 3-year extended warranty program that ended up costing the company roughly $3.8
billion. It's $3.8
billion.
And what's wild to look back on is the stark contrast in how the corporations responded.
Oh, it's night and day.
Right. Like, when the Xbox 360 first launched, Microsoft denied the issue for months. They publicly insisted failure rates were, quote, within normal parameters.
While gamers were literally wrapping their consoles in thick towel.
Yes, the towel trick. People were desperately trying to purposely overheat the system to essentially bake the cracked solder back into place.
It was a crazy time. But with Valve, the response was totally different.
Completely. The moment this Reddit user opened a support ticket, a Valve representative immediately labeled it a known issue in a specific batch.
No denial at all.
None. They shipped a replacement unit with free two-way overnight shipping within 4 hours. No questions asked.
Which is pretty incredible customer service.
It is. But here's where it gets really interesting. Look at the bizarre timing of the Steam Machine's failure.
Right, the 20 minutes.
Hold on. The Xbox 360 took months of heating and cooling to finally crack the metal solder, right? How on earth is a Steam Machine suffering a physical death in 20 minutes? Metal doesn't fatigue that fast.
What's fascinating here is the mechanical impossibility of a thermal death in that time frame.
Thank you. It just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. The Xbox 360 has died from thermal cycling. That's the repeated, aggressive expansion and contraction of dissimilar materials. You know, the silicon chip, the metal solder, the fiberglass board.
All expanding at different rates.
Right, over months and months of heavy gameplay and cooling down. But this Steam Machine, it died in 20 minutes.
Just boom.
Dead. Yeah. And even under the absolute worst case scenario where the cooling fans entirely failed, A modern GPU simply does not physically degrade in 20 minutes.
Especially not the hardware inside the specific box, right?
Precisely. The custom AMD APU inside the Steam Machine is built on TSMC's highly mature 5-nanometer process node.
So it's super efficient.
Extremely power efficient. Yeah. Furthermore, the teardown from Tom's hardware confirmed the Steam Machine utilizes a massive vapor chamber for cooling, which is backed by dual 92mm fans.
And a vapor chamber is what, like liquid cooling?
Sort of. It uses liquid that turns to gas under heat, moves away from the chip, condenses back to liquid, and returns. It is a highly efficient, constant cooling loop.
So it's staying pretty cold.
Very. When Tom's hardware ran demanding stress tests, the GPU temperature sat comfortably between 65 and 75 degrees Celsius.
And just to put that in perspective for you, the type of solder used in these machines doesn't even begin to soften until it hits around 180 degrees Celsius.
It wasn't even close to melting.
So heat is definitively not the murder weapon here. The hardware physically cannot melt in 20 minutes, which means something else has the power to just shut off a GPU from the inside.
And this is where the plot thickens.
Yeah, we have a great quote from the well-known electronics repair expert Louis Rossman that points us in a completely different direction.
What did he say?
He looked at the timeline and said, quote, 20 minutes to GPU death sounds like firmware bricking, not thermal failure. If Valve pushed a bad VBIOS update, that would explain instant death post-reboot. Physical GPU death doesn't happen that fast.
And this observation entirely shifts the investigation.
Right, away from hardware and into software.
Exactly. The VBIOS, the video BIOS, is essentially the foundational instruction manual for the GPU.
Okay.
It dictates how the chip draws power and how it identifies itself to the motherboard. If a system update attempts to rewrite that instruction manual and the update is interrupted or contains a critical error,
the manual gets scrambled.
Right, the VBIOS becomes corrupted. So the next time the system boots up, the motherboard asks the GPU to wake up and identify itself. But the GPU, lacking its instruction manual, remains silent.
It doesn't know who it is?
Exactly. The system detects no response, assumes the hardware is physically dead, and flashes the red breathing line. If this is firmware corruption, the device isn't physically dead at all, it's just software bricked.
Which sounds like good news, right?
Yeah.
But there's a massive roadblock preventing users from fixing a software brick, isn't there?
Oh yeah. There is a deeply frustrating catch-22 built directly into the console's recovery architecture.
How's?
Well, according to Valve's technical documentation, you can access a hard recovery mode by holding volume down and power during startup to completely reflash the SteamOS from a USB drive.
Okay, so you just do that.
You can't.
Hmm.
Because the corrupted GPU fails to initialize, there is absolutely zero video output sent to the television screen.
Oh. Oh, wow.
Yeah, you cannot see the recovery menu at all.
So it's exactly like locking your keys inside your car, but the only way to call the locksmith is with the smartphone that's also locked inside the car.
That is exactly what it's like.
You have the tools to fix it, but you are completely physically locked out from accessing them. Why wouldn't Valve build in a workaround for this, like a blind recovery mode?
It mostly comes down to design assumptions and cost-saving measures. Valve just assumed the screen output would always be functional during a software failure.
Which is a pretty big assumption.
It is. Implementing a blind recovery method like programming the motherboard to emit a specific sequence of audio beeps, or using the LED bar to pulse in a Morse code style sequence to guide you through a menu without a screen.
That sounds complicated.
It requires extra microcontrollers and dedicated development time. So they simply didn't include it.
Okay, but let me challenge the software theory for a second.
Sure, go ahead.
If this is just a software update problem, a bad piece of code beamed over the internet to everybody, why did Valve specifically tell that Reddit user this was an issue with a specific batch?
Right.
Because software goes out to everyone simultaneously. The word batch heavily implies a physical, localized, factory-level hardware problem.
That is the pivotal piece of evidence,
yeah.
And it actually forces us to synthesize the two theories into one mechanical explanation.
So it's both?
Kind of, yeah. The consensus among teardown experts at iFixit and PC Gamer is that manufacturing defects in BGA soldering do happen, particularly in early production runs.
Okay.
Imagine a reflow oven on the factory line is running just a few degrees too cool. It creates what's called a cold solder joint. The connection exists, but it is microscopically weak.
So it works out of the box.
Yes, it holds the low-power electrical signal perfectly fine when the user boots up and plays No Man's Sky.
Right.
But then, the firmware update initiates. Rewriting the VBIOS requires a sudden, highly specific change in power delivery. a voltage spike to actually flash the memory.
Oh, I see where this is going.
When that initialization spike hits the microscopic fracture in that cold solder joint, the weak connection arcs and severs completely.
Ooh,
exactly. Yeah. The power delivery change during the software update acts as the catalyst that turns a marginal physical defect into a fatal hardware initialization failure.
That is fascinating. Okay, so if this really is just a highly localized batch issue, like a bad afternoon on the factory floor perfectly colliding with a system update,
right?
Why is social media reacting like the sky is falling? Why are there thousands of comments and dozens of YouTube videos screaming that the Steam machine is a complete failure?
Well, that comes down to the intense psychology of consumer panic versus the reality of the mathematical data.
Math versus feelings.
Basically, when we isolate the actual numbers, out of a dedicated Steam Machine subreddit boasting 120,000 active members.
Yeah.
There are fewer than 10 confirmed cases of this red line of death.
Wait, fewer than 10 out of 120,000?
Yep. Yet, you have major influencers posting reaction videos with massive apocalyptic titles like Steam Machine is Dead and Valve's Xbox 360 Moment.
Oh, you gotta get those clicks.
Oh, yeah. These videos are garnering millions of views overnight, entirely based on less than a dozen verified reports.
And we are ignoring the fact that PC Gamer has already interviewed early adopters who have logged over 150 hours of continuous gaming, running massive titles like Cyberpunk 2077 on ultra settings.
Running beautifully, by the way.
Right, with absolutely zero hardware issues. The machine is working brilliantly for the vast majority of buyers, so why the massive disconnect?
There's a researcher at Stanford, Dr. Sarah Chen, who perfectly captured why people are freaking out so hard.
What's your take on it?
She focuses on consumer psychology and tech, and she notes that hardware failure on a premium, expensive device creates a profound, quote, sense of betrayal.
Betrayal? That's a strong word for a console breaking.
But think about it. You didn't just buy a $50 toy. You entrusted the manufacturer with $1,000 of your hard-earned money, and the flagship device failed you immediately.
Right. It stings.
When that narrative hits social media, it taps directly into what she calls collective anxiety. For the entire generation of gamers who lived through the Xbox 360 era, a red light on a console is not just an error code.
It carries immense emotional weight.
Exactly. It is a genuine trauma response.
It's hypervigilance. The sunk cost is so high that suddenly, you know, your cooling fan spins up a little louder than normal, or the plastic shell feels slightly warm to the touch, and you are absolutely terrified the red line of death is coming for you next.
You're just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
But historically, how Valve is handling this tells a very different story than the Xbox 360 disaster. They actually seem to be utilizing Sony's old playbook with the PS3.
Oh, they are executing it perfectly.
Right.
Because the PlayStation 3 had its own critical hardware issue called the yellow light of death.
YLUB. I remember that.
Which was also caused by thermal stress on the GPU solder joints. But Sony managed the crisis very quietly, because their failure rate was around 10 to 15%, which is nowhere near Microsoft's 54%, Sony simply replaced the affected units immediately without formally announcing a massive systemic recall.
They just handled it behind the scenes.
Right. Then they quietly revised the internal hardware in later production models. And Valve is doing the exact same thing right now. Quiet, instant, no questions asked replacements.
Which is such a contrast to Apple's highly defensive handling of the MacBook Butterfly keyboard disaster. I mean, they spent years blaming users for eating near their laptops before finally admitting the mechanism was fundamentally flawed.
Yeah, Valve's definitely taking the smarter route here.
And we also have to remember Valve's excellent track record here. I mean, the Steam Deck, which uses a very similar AMD APU architecture and the exact same BGA mounting style, has been on the market for 4 years with millions of units sold.
And catastrophic GPU failures on the Deck are incredibly rare.
Right. They absolutely know how to build thermally stable hardware. So what does this all mean for you? If you just bought a Steam machine or you are thinking about pulling the trigger, here is your definitive buyer's guide based on everything we've uncovered today.
All right. Let's hear it.
Number one, don't panic. The mathematical odds are heavily in your favor. Number two, buy from retailers with ironclad return policies. Get it from Amazon, Best Buy, or directly from Steam. Do not buy from sketchy third-party resellers where you can't utilize a warranty.
That is super important right now.
Very. And number three, when you unbox it, do not baby it. Download your heaviest, most graphically demanding games in the first week to intentionally stress test the hardware while you're easily within your initial return window.
Those are crucial protective steps. I would add a very specific technical recommendation based on the VBIO's update trigger pattern we analyzed.
Oh, well, good point. What should they do?
Never, ever perform a system update while the console is running on battery power alone or during any kind of power fluctuation.
So always plug it in.
Always ensure the console is securely plugged into a stable AC power source and fully close all running games before initiating an update. This ensures the most stable power delivery possible during that critical VBIOS rewrite.
Just to avoid that sudden voltage spike.
Exactly. Finally, dive into the SteamOS settings and enable the thermal overlay. Keep an active eye on your GPU temperatures during heavy gameplay. If they consistently spike above 85 degrees Celsius, shut the game down and contact Valve support immediately.
Good advice. All right, well, let's wrap this up. The red line of death is real, and let's be absolutely clear. A dead GPU after 20 minutes is an unacceptable failure for a $1,000 premium device.
No argument there.
But right now, all the empirical evidence, the incredibly fast timeline ruling out thermal degradation, the robust vapor chamber cooling design, and the minuscule number of confirmed cases, it all points to this being a minor, highly localized manufacturing hiccup.
A factory glitch.
Right. It is being massively amplified by social media algorithms and historical gaming trauma. This is not a systemic architectural flaw like the Xbox 360. And Valve's immediate, no questions asked warranty replacement is the absolute saving grace here. They are doing the right thing right out of the gate.
They are. The data certainly points to a localized issue. But, you know, stepping back and looking at this entire situation, this raises an important question that I think we need to leave you to ponder today.
I'm intrigued. What's the question?
We are examining a modern device that is incredibly advanced, so technologically sophisticated that it can instantly self-diagnose its own catastrophic hardware failure. It can flash a very specific color-coded LED breathing pattern to tell us exactly which microscopic component died.
It's basically a smart computer.
It is. And yet, simultaneously, it is completely locked out from user repair, and it lacks even a basic blind software recovery load for the owner to attempt a simple software reflash.
That is a wild paradox.
It really is. It begs a serious philosophical question. When you drop $1,000 on a console today, do you actually own your hardware anymore? Or are we all just becoming temporary custodians of a highly fragile, tightly locked ecosystem?
Wow. It's a chilling thought to leave on, really. You buy the pristine sports car, but you aren't legally allowed to open the hood. And you can't even call the tow truck yourself when the engine seizes a block from the dealership.
You're just totally reliant on them.
You just have to sit there on the side of the road, stare at the blinking red light on the dashboard, and wait for the monolithic manufacturer to come rescue you. Well, keep an eye on those LED bars, folks. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.